Hey, Boo members, for your generous support, if you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. And now, stay tuned for Locus Focus with host Barbara Bernstein. She's going to take us to the site of the Mosier train derailment on the one-year anniversary of the near disaster to hear speeches from tribe members and activists.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, P.C., Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. On June 3rd of last year, an oil train derailed in the Columbia River Gorge in the little town of Mosier. Several cars caught fire and burned for 14 hours. If the normal gorge winds had been blowing that day, Mosier would have been destroyed, like Lac Mégantic. On the first anniversary of this near disaster, hundreds of people gathered at the Mosier Community School to call for stopping oil trains from traveling through the gorge. This morning, we'll listen to speeches from that rally. We'll hear from Ryan Rittenhouse with Friends of the Gorge, Karina Miller, a tribal council member with the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, Jody Gowdy, chairman of the Tribal Council of the Yakima Nation, Vancouver City Councilwoman Alicia Topper, Tacoma City Council member Ryan Mello, Mosier physician Dr. Maria McCormick, and former Hood River City Council member Laurent Picard. Then we'll go down to the river where we'll hear more speeches by Kathy Sampson-Cruzy, member of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, and Mosier City Council member Acacia Berry.
Thank you all so much for coming out today. My name is Ryan Rittenhouse. I'm the conservation organizer with Friends of the Columbia Gorge. Thank you all for being here on this commemorative day of the Mosier derailment disaster. We're right over there. The train derailed last year, spilling thousands of gallons of oil and catching fire. If the wind had been like it is today, it probably would have been much worse. Luckily, the wind wasn't blowing and the train wasn't moving too fast, so we can still stand here and even have this event. But thank you very much. We're going to have a number of great speakers for you now, and then we're going to do a march down to the site of the derailment, then down to the river and back. And so first up for you, we have Karina Miller, who is with the Warm Springs Tribal Council. So please give up a big round of applause.
I'm from Warm Springs. I am the Wasco representative on Tribal Council for my people. I just want to thank the organizers of this event. I want to thank all of you for being here. I want to thank the town of Mosier for continuing to be vocal about this issue and to stay up with what's going on. You know, last year I had recently been sworn on to council, and I am a very young person. This was one of my first experiences in environmental issues from where I'm sitting now. And I was quite shocked. I was really shocked with how the investigation went, the lack of information, the way it felt to me the corporation had more rights than we did as a tribe to understand what happened or to have any sort of say in how to change the future of how this could work. So in this last year, I have been very thankful to see things like the relationship building between environmental organizations along this river and the tribes, the relationship building between sports fishermen and huntermen on those sort of issues with the tribes. These sort of issues, this, things like Standing Rock, have lit a fire that is bringing together communities that traditionally have not worked together, have not had a unified voice. Now we can. I want to thank the legislators who have started pushing things like the Keep It in the Ground, the people who have taken stances on pipelines, who have been very vocal that we need to decouple environment and economy. We cannot do both. And when I talk about going back to Indigenous days of living, or Indigenous ways of living, I talk about decolonizing. I talk about deconstructing society and figuring out what are we really doing? What are we really living for? What is America? Is it caring about each other, our communities, our perspectives, our lives, us as humans? Because as a Native American woman, I can tell you that it is not. That is not what America is or has been in my experience. But these kinds of incidents are opportunities for us to feel the pain and the reality of what we have let this country and this government become, which is big money, big corporation, and people who are put there by these things. And it allows us to have a unified message, to be stronger, to educate each other more, to not meet everything with such anger. It has meant a great deal to me to have people come into my life who I know authentically and genuinely care about tribal issues, not because it can make more people money or because it will benefit everybody, but because they understand what our tribes have been resilient through, that we have survived the genocide that is the founding of this country. And you care about us. You want to see us survive our culture. You want to see our ties to this land grow stronger, not just for fishing and hunting and not just for the benefit of everyone, but because you understand the importance of our religions, of our languages, of our culture, of all these things. So thank you, and let's keep going. Thank you for having me.
Next up, we're going to have Yakima Tribal Chairman Jode Gowdy come on up and talk to us about their nation's involvement and whatever else he'd like to say. Chairman Gowdy.
My English name is Jode Gowdy. The name that I'm recognized by our creator is Chaiquach. That's it's a Waskupum name, referenced by my sister Karina's here. She comes from a similar band, Waskupum band. The Warm Springs Nation and the Yakima Nation, they have strong ties to this river here. And whether you believe it or not, I appreciate and respect everyone's current stand and residence and the land that you stand upon today and whatever relationship you have on it, but all of you need to understand and realize that you're on Wasco land. In our Waskupum language, it's a place that was on this river here, not too far from here. There's this rock wall. In that rock wall, there was a hole. And out of that hole came pure and clear, pristine water. And that was Wasco. And if you plug that up, put your finger in there, put a stick in there, whatever it was, they would immediately cause rain to come. The clouds would come forth. That's where that word Wasco comes from. So you also know that there's a county that's called Wasco. There's a town called Wasco. There's a nation that still exists today. That is the Waskupum people. Similar to the Yakima Nation, is the Wishkum. Similar languages, similar walks, depends on what side of the river that you were on. And so I express this to you to once again remind myself of the ground that I walk upon here, of my relationship and understanding. And as the 1 year ago today, and the reaction, and then the following steps and days that we took to gather, to bring awareness, to come together in a united voice and solidarity, raising awareness to responsible decision-making versus irresponsible decision-making. In the residents and the mayor and the different individuals, all the way down to the school children who were displaced as command center was set up in this very school behind us in the gym. The residents of Mosier and everyone who was affected by the derailment. That was a very harsh reality. A very harsh reality, because in spite of the incident that happened a year ago this day, if each of the residents of Mosier had a personal decision to say that if I wanted to stop that, can we unite with Dalles and Hood River, Cascade Locks and Portland and everybody else up and down this river, and can we have a unified voice, and can we even reach out to the original Waskupum and Wishkum people, the representatives from Warm Springs Nez, from Umatilla Nation, from Nez Perce Nation, from Yakima Nation, of the peoples who had inhabited and inhabited this land since time immemorial, so that unified voice can come forth with regard to responsible decision making. Because in the name of profit margins, each resident of the city of Mosier, you are the materialized collateral damage of an advocacy for profit margins. How does that make you feel? Does that make you feel like you're dehumanized? Does that make you feel like you're dominated? Because regardless of the will that came forth with regard to the real physical consequence that was endured by all, there was not an immediate effort that came forth in a collective effort, even though all of us gathered together and unified our voices, and we did contact our leaders, we did discuss and have discussions with many individuals, and the advocacy raised continued awareness. And a lot of things have happened since this last year. A lot of gatherings have happened. There was a little gathering, or rather a big gathering, that happened over at Standing Rock. Similar situation with regard to people who felt dehumanized. They felt dominated. Why? Because they became the collateral damage of oil that start flowing through a pipeline yesterday with regard to spills that have already happened. And they came forth in the largest unified effort amongst Native nations since probably ever. And that awareness brought a voice throughout this entire world with regard to an advocacy of responsible decision making. In the face of what? In the face of being a very conscientious decision made by individuals who will weigh profit margin over the very existence of individuals, of the consequence that was endured by actions that they're advocating for. That's a hard thing to come to a realization. That's a hard thing to know, that you are essentially the materialized collateral damage of somebody else's business decision. That's exactly what happens. And it didn't start with the derailment last year. It didn't start with the pipeline dispute in Standing Rock. It didn't start with, this started long ago. And I can tell you, as a Native person, I can relate. I can relate with regard to what it feels like to be dominated, to what it feels like to be dehumanized, to what it feels like to bring forth the core of everything that you have, spirit, mind, body, and heart, and bring forth the will for an advocacy with regard to balance and responsible decision making, and have a decision made and dictated and dominated to you, and a spit into your face, into your people's collective spirit and will. A direct strike into to the sustained existence of whether or not Native people will exist on this land 100 years from now, 200 years from now. Where did that come from? Where did that come from? Where did the right for that railway track down there come from? Where did the right for this, what used to be the flowing river of the Enchuana, which has now become different sets of lakes come from. Where was the manifested right for an individual to express domination and dehumanization? Where was its origin? At least to this specific area and territory. Or in, let's just take United States, for example. There is practical, real steps in time, associated decisions, case law, legislative acts that have empowered and materialized the ability to make decisions and dominate and dehumanize people. And it started with Native people. But now the residents that have endured this derailment last year, you're beginning to feel what it's like to be dehumanized, what it's like to bring forth a collective will for responsible decision-making, to stand on your own feet and unify with the people with regard to what's in the best interest of all, and still have a dominating decision made that's going to continue to impact you in a negative way, and be put in a position to say, there's nothing you can do about it. That's just the way it is. You want to know the empowering decision with regard to the historical legislative acts that mobilized the Pacific Railway Acts, the Supreme Court case law that empowered the private railroad companies following pursuit through the Lewis and Clark expedition, which came after the Louisiana Purchase, which then came to the Oregon Territorial Act, which followed by the Northwest Ordinance, which came after the Washington Territorial Act, which somewhere along the way, there was representatives from the United States who approached our historical chiefs and leaders. And there was treaties that were formulated, reserved rights and articles within those treaties that still exist today that govern the relationship between the United States and Native people, Yakima, Warm Springs, Umatilla, Nez Perce. I've had to see and endure various treaty cases of our people